Song of Songs, chapter 8, starting at verse 5. And the friends say, "Who is this coming up from the wilderness, leaning on her beloved?" And she says, "Under the apple tree I roused you. There your mother conceived you. There she who was in labor gave you birth. Place me like a seal over your heart, like a seal on your arm. For love is as strong as death, its jealousy unyielding as the grave. It burns like blazing fire, like a mighty flame. Many waters cannot quench love, rivers cannot sweep it away. If one were to give all the wealth of one's house for love, it would be utterly scorned." The friends say, "We have a little sister, and her breasts are not yet grown. What shall we do for our sister on the day she is spoken for? If she is a wall, we will build towers of silver on her. If she is a door, we will enclose her with panels of cedar." And she says, "I am a wall, and my breasts are like towers. These have become in his eyes like one bringing contentment. Solomon had a vineyard in Baal Hamon. He let out his vineyard to tenants. Each was to bring for its fruit 1,000 shekels of silver. But my own vineyard is mine to give. The 1,000 shekels are for you, Solomon, and 200 are for those who tend its fruit." He says, "You who dwell in the gardens with friends in attendance, let me hear your voice." And she says, "Come away, my beloved, and be like a gazelle or like a young stag on the spice-laden mountains."
Well, please do keep the Bible open at that page. I'd love it if you had that in front of you as we look at those words together. We've arrived at our final sermon on Song of Songs, and I wonder if you're thinking, well, thank goodness for that. What a relief. Who would have thought that we would have 6 whole weeks from the Bible on the theme of love and relationships and marriage and sex? Some might say, well, it's just too awkward to come and listen to sermons about that. And sometimes I wonder if you're squirming on the edge of your seat wondering what on earth is going to come from the Bible next. What is the vicar going to say? There are times and places to talk about things, and it just doesn't feel very comfortable to hear a sermon about it. After the first sermon, a number of people asked me, I would say even begged me, please could I stop using the phrase "urge to merge." So I have avoided that phrase ever since. I've used it again now, though. But I have been avoiding that. I was very helpfully offered some alternatives that I could use instead. Someone suggested inclined to combine, pining for intertwining, appetite to unite, fixing on mixing, itch to hitch, and angle to entangle. I don't think any of those are really an improvement. I think you'll agree. So firstly, it's just too awkward to be hearing about these things in a sermon. And I guess for some people, it's also just a bit painful. It touches on raw nerves. Listening to a love song is not what everybody would choose to do. Going to a wedding is always a happy occasion, and yet for some people there are mixed feelings. They feel happy for the couple, but they're just also conscious of perhaps something they have never had, feel that they may never have, or perhaps they had it and have now lost it, and it can just feel uncomfortable and difficult. I haven't wanted to touch on raw nerves. I haven't been doing that deliberately, but I'm conscious that that probably has been happening as we've been looking at this part of the Bible. Too awkward, too painful, so why spend so long on this theme? Well, a simple answer to that is just that the Bible does that. If the Bible has a lot to say about something, it must be because we have a lot that we need to hear about it. And it seems to me that that is particularly true in the present time and the present culture, that this is really something we need a lot of help with. If we live in the Western world, in this particular time in history. The themes of sex and marriage are the biggest area of conflict and disagreement at the moment between the church and the culture, between the word and the world. And because of that, there's doctrinal compromise in the church. We aren't sure of the things that Christians have always believed. We're finding it harder to believe them now. There is moral compromise in our lives. I think many of us, most of us, would admit that we have fallen short of what the Bible asks of us in this area. And there are plenty of passages in the Bible that are much more simple and clear about this, that simply tell you what is right and what is wrong. And maybe it's been troubling to be looking at a song and find that often you're not really sure what it's saying. It's not very precise. It's not law. It's not black and white. But I guess that's why we need to hear it, because I guess most of us probably know what Christians believe, what the Bible teaches about good and bad in relationships, what is right and what is wrong. I guess most of us know that already. If not, please come and ask me. I can explain it to you. I'll ask people around you, what do Christians believe? I think we probably know. But knowing what is right and knowing what is wrong only takes us so far. Because the real problem that we have is that a different vision has captured our hearts. It's not just a clash of two ideas about what's good and what's bad. Behind that, there are two different gospel messages on offer. Two different views of the world, both out to win us over, both offering us a vision. Here is the good life. Here is a wonderful way to live. Here is what is good for you. This is the way to freedom and fulfillment. There's the world's way, the secular society's way, individualism, romanticism. It's about self. It's about love. Blaze your own trail, do your own thing, find yourself, define yourself, be yourself. Don't let anyone or anything else or any external concerns cramp your style or restrict you or hinder you from what you want for yourself. At the heart of that is sexual and romantic love. People might call it self-actualization. It's a gospel message, a false gospel that is preached to us all the time in songs. Particularly powerful in songs. Gets under our skin and wins us over and makes us want that and feel that. In a way that just understanding facts can never really do. In songs, in movies, in adverts. Again and again, day in, day out. Speaking to our imaginations. Getting under our skin. Whether we're aware of it or not. Often we are so deeply won over by that vision that we find it almost impossible to believe what the Bible says is right and wrong. We're shocked by it. And even if we do believe it, we really struggle to live it. Because our hearts are not really in it. We reluctantly think, well, maybe we ought to live this way, but we don't really feel or want to live that way. And simply giving us the law, I mean, we need the law of the Bible. We need God to tell us what he is for and what he's against. But simply giving us that is a bit like pouring water on someone's head to put out a fire in their heart. And that, I think, is why the Bible gives us more than law. It gives us a song, a whole book of the Bible devoted to singing and celebrating and enjoying the good gift of romantic love, of sex. A song that fires our imagination. It does, I think, take the whole song. It takes all 6 weeks of sermons and Bible studies to begin to get somewhere with our hearts. If you know that this is an issue that you struggle with, if you know that you find you're not fully won over by what the Bible says about sex and relationships, let me encourage you to spend time in this song if you haven't been able to be here for all the sermons. You might want to listen to them online. You might want to read through this in your times of daily prayers and devotion, and let it sink in and change the way you feel as well as the way you think. Well, we've come to the end of the song. And the great thing is that it's summed up for us very simply and clearly in this short reading at the end. And here's what it's been saying all the way through. There's nothing on the screen. That's interesting. In a moment, it may or may not say on the screen, it will say this. Love's power is unstoppable. Love's power is unstoppable. I'm going to be saying from chapter 8, verses 5 to 7, that love's power is unstoppable. And then from verses 8 to 12, I'm going to be saying that because of that, it's worth great care. Love's power is unstoppable. There it is, verses 5 to 7. God's made love. He created romantic sexual love to be a force that draws people together and holds them together. And to be something that can't just easily be switched off and stopped. chapter 8, verse 5. Who is this coming up from the wilderness, leaning on her beloved? I like that picture, leaning on her beloved. We've seen this couple go through all the stages of a romantic relationship, from the first kind of thoughts of whether they might be attracted to each other to really feeling the same way and proposing, and then getting married, and then struggling their relationship, being reunited. And here they are just leaning on each other. Think of an elderly couple on a bench by the sea. They've been to the same spot many times for 60 years. They don't have to speak. Just leaning on each other. We like to sing about that, don't we? Bill Withers, his song, "Lean on Me When You're Not Strong, and I'll Be Your Friend. I'll Help You Carry On. For it won't be long till I'm going to need somebody to lean on." We all need somebody to lean on. It's a great song, if you know it. A picture of love that lasts, that endures. And in fact, it lasts not just for a lifetime, potentially, but for one generation to the next. That's the rest of verse 5. When we hear her, we switch to her voice now, halfway through verse 5. "She, under the apple tree, I roused you. There your mother conceived you. There she was in labor. She who was in labor gave you birth." Now, that's an awful lot of things to happen under one tree. The first thing, she roused him. What's that about? Well, chapter 8, verse 4, it's the same word about waking up sexual feelings. Chapter 8, verse 4, don't wake them up till the right time. But there was a right time, and she did wake up those feelings in him. Well, that happened under the apple tree, she says, and that's where his mother conceived him, and that's where his mother gave him birth. And you might say, that all sounds very strange. An apple tree seems like a really strange place to choose for at least some of those things. What a coincidence, all in the same family. Apparently in the ancient world there was nothing special about apple trees, and people didn't used to spend any time doing any of those things under them. This is a song, it's poetry. And it's getting us to picture a tree, an apple tree that produces delicious fruit. And the song is saying, look, that those romantic feelings that you feel, those sexual feelings that you feel, are part of that whole chain of relationships. This is how you came into the world. Your parents felt like this. And if you have children and they have children, it's part of something that lasts, that builds up family, that extends the human race. These feelings, they don't just come and go quickly. They have power that lasts on, that is unstoppable. And that is why she is saying in her song that she really insists that there has to be a commitment from him. That's what she desperately, she knows those feelings are powerful and they won't just go away. You know, you won't just easily move on. She wants commitment from him. And she sings about that, verse 6. "Place me like a seal over your heart. Like a seal on your arm." A seal is a mark of ownership. If you want to steal someone's identity at this time, you couldn't steal their credit cards, you couldn't steal their passwords, but you might take their seal, a little thing they had for making a mark on wax. You knew it was them, and you knew that this belonged to them. And she's saying, I want a symbol that you're mine. I want that outwardly so everyone can see it, like a wedding ring placed on your finger. I want everyone to know that you're mine. It's a public thing. This is why marriage is such an important part of sexual love. It's a public commitment that everybody knows about. She doesn't want him available. She wants him off that market. The market is the wrong word for it, isn't it? But she doesn't want that. He belongs to her, and others need to know that. But she doesn't just want the ring on his finger. She wants that on his heart as well. She wants him to feel that she belongs to him, and that they're just the two of them. And that makes sense, because love is like that. Because love is so permanent. And we come here to the only real statement in the song. Up until now we've been listening to moving songs and poetry and lyrics. But it is helpful that the book has just given us just one statement. Here's the thing that it's teaching us. Here's the teaching point. Only one teaching point really for the whole song. And it's spelled out at the end, if you've not quite picked it up so far from listening, here it is in a few words. "Place me like a seal over your heart, like a seal on your arm." Why? "For love is as strong as death. Its jealousy unyielding as the grave. It burns like blazing fire, like a mighty flame. Many waters cannot quench love. Rivers cannot sweep it away. That's what the book has been saying. From start to finish. To put it in my much less poetic and much less imaginative way, it's been saying very simply that love's power is unstoppable. It's as strong as death. Death is strong, isn't it? Once you've died, you're going to stay dead. There's more to say about that. But that's our experience in the world. The grave is unyielding. We know it's one of the reasons that we feel such grief when somebody goes into a grave is that we don't expect to see them come out of that grave again. It's unyielding. And love is like that. When that flame has been lit and that couple have shared their bodies with one another and become one, you can't just undo that again. You can't just make it as if that hadn't happened. It's like a blazing fire. There's jealousy there. Jealousy we tend to think of as a bad thing. We teach our children not to be jealous and to share toys together nicely. But a sexual relationship with another person is not a toy to be shared. It's right to feel jealous of that. It's a good feeling, that jealousy. And it's there whether we want it to be or not, because love just doesn't just go away easily. Once it's reached this point, it burns like blazing fire, like a mighty flame, consuming all that it's in its path. You can put waters out, you put fire out with water, but this fire is not so easily put out, no matter how much water, even if you have a whole river at it, this fire is still going to blaze and flame away. If one, verse 7, if one were to give all the wealth of one's house for love, it would be utterly scorned. People would laugh at you. If you said, let me buy love. I really like the sound of this love. I really want someone to be in love with me, and I'm quite wealthy, I'll pay someone. That's ridiculous. How would that ever work? We all know that wouldn't work. It's laughable. Money can buy a house, not a home. Money can buy a companion, but not a friend. Money can buy a lover, but not love. It's such a precious, valuable, powerful thing. See, this song is not saying, you know, love is a bad thing, avoid it. It's not saying, here's what you mustn't do. It's saying, look, love done right is this amazing, precious, priceless, unstoppable force. I'm sure we've been following the news and we'll be relieved. This is a map of Australia quite recently with fires all over the place, the stronger ones, the smaller ones. A lot of fire crews out there, military forces, and a huge amount of water trying to get rid of those flames. It's been a great relief to hear that they're finally starting to rain and that a good number of those fires are starting to back off, but it's going to take a lot of rain. It's going to take weeks of rain. Those fires, you see, they can be put out if you throw enough water at them, but not easily. And the Bible is saying that romantic sexual love between two people, you can't quench that. You can't take it away. And we know that in our songs. You see, I think people misunderstand this. Sometimes people think, well, wouldn't it be wonderful if love's power were unstoppable? Wouldn't that be a nice romantic thought? If the fire of love could not be put out. But the song is not saying that. The song is saying that we are made that way. It really can't be put out. And that is why jealousy is such a massive problem. That is why when we are unfaithful, it's never going to be pain-free. That's why we're never just going to be able to say, well, I can switch off those feelings, I can move on, I'm over that person. Everything's fine now. We can try and fool ourselves. But that fire is still going. We might dampen it down, but it's still there. You might see that person again, that person that you were one with, that you slept with. You might see them 10 years later, 20 years later, 40 years later. There's something different about that person now. And something uncomfortable about it. And you'll try your best to be polite to their new partner, but you're going to have to work at it and hide what you're really thinking and feeling. Our songs are full of that, aren't they? We've just picked one example of many. We're going to play a little bit of it, just so that people, I keep putting song lyrics up and people say, I've never heard that song, I don't know it. So I'll just let you hear a bit of the tune, just to reassure you that you have heard this tune before. It's true, isn't it? We can't just get people out of our head just because we decide to. Well, it's just one song. You could think of many others that speak about the difficulty of moving on, the pain of breaking up, and those feelings of jealousy. God made love to be like that. Why? Why did he make love that way? Well, there's a hint, isn't there, in these words, at the bottom of page 685, at the end of verse 6. Love burns like a blazing fire, like a mighty flame. If you look at the footnote, another way of translating that, it burns like the very flame of the Lord. God has not been mentioned in this song. If he's mentioned at all, then this is the only place. And there is some doubt about that, because the writer might just be saying that love is an almighty flame, or he might be just saying that love is the flame of the Almighty, and you can't really tell just by reading it in the original. And I guess that's deliberate, because in the context of the whole Bible, romantic love is a picture of God's relationship with us. We've seen that again and again, haven't we, as we've looked in other places in the Bible. And here it is coming through in the song. Why is love so unstoppable? Well, because that's how God feels about us, and he wants us to know what he means when he says that he loves us. His love blazes like an almighty fire, and it cannot be put out. Many forces have tried to extinguish that love that he has for humanity, but nothing will stop it. That love became human and became one of us, Jesus Christ, expressing his love for us by dying for us on the cross. Sometimes the Bible speaks about death as being like his baptism, like he's flooded with suffering and pain. But it doesn't matter how many rivers of suffering and pain you pour on the love of God, it still blazes for us with a lasting passion. It's inextinguishable. It's love that is as strong as death, which is wonderful for us, because it is God's love for us that can bring us out of the grave, and that can restore us to life, and that brought Jesus back to life in this world. Love's power is unstoppable. And for that reason, it's worth taking care. It's worth taking care. There's only really one statement in the Song of Songs, and it was there in verse 8. Love is as strong as death. It's jealousy unyielding. It burns like blazing fire. And there's only really one command in the song. We've heard it repeated quite often. We had it in verse 4. Do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires. Be careful. It's so powerful. Just be careful. Wait for the right person, the right time. Guard that love. And be careful about it. It's too precious to treat lightly. And that, I think, is what the song is finishing with. Chapter 8, verses 8 to 10. We're not sure who is singing this. It doesn't really matter. Anyone and everyone could say this. We have a little sister and her breasts are not yet grown. What should we do for our sister on the day she's spoken for? How are we going to apply this truth in the song? Remember, it seems to have been sung by a woman for women. Breaks a lot of gender stereotypes, this song. She takes the initiative. The song starts and ends with her. She drives the relationship along and doesn't wait for him. She goes seeking him. In lots of ways, it breaks gender stereotypes. And here, we've got a woman, let's think for a moment about a younger woman, a woman who's a girl, who's not really yet old enough to have a romantic relationship. How can we help her? How can we look to her future and help her prepare for the day when somebody might say to her, look, will you marry me? And she might want to say yes. How can we prepare her for that time? What should we do for her on the day she is spoken for? Well, verse 9, if she is a wall, we will build towers of silver on her. If she is a door, we will enclose her with panels of cedar. I think it's talking about protecting her virginity. It's saying if you picture it as being like a town or a city or a house and it's protected by a wall, well, you can't get through a wall. You might say, oh, well, a girl, you know, she's not letting anyone in. She'll be fine. No. If she's doing well at that, then help her with that and go, spare no expense. Build towers on this wall. Make it really well guarded and protected against any invader. Even if you have to make the towers out of silver, it's worth the money. It's worth protecting her. If she is a wall, we will build towers of silver on her. If she is a door, now doors you can get through much more easily, but they can be closed to you. And maybe there have been times when she's let people in that she shouldn't have. Well, don't despair. Don't give up on her. It's not all over because there have been mistakes in the past. But help her with that. Enclose that door with panels of cedar, expensive wood. It doesn't really matter how much this costs. It's worth doing because love is so valuable and precious. Protect her until her marriage. That's what it's saying. We would say the same thing to young men. Proverbs says the same thing to young men. This is being said to young women. That's the right way. That's the right response. Love is so precious, so wonderful, so amazing that it's worth waiting for that one person and waiting until marriage. But what's the opposite of that? What's the wrong response? Well, ironically, in a book that is Solomon's Song of Songs, Solomon is the one who's got this wrong. And the song, I don't know whether the person who wrote this got in trouble, but the song just points this out very clearly. Verse 11, Solomon had a vineyard in Baal Hamon. People have spent some time trying to work out where is this place called Baal Hamon. There is no place on ancient maps with that name. It doesn't really seem to be a real place. Remember, this is a song. But you could translate that as husband of many. Well, what is Solomon? He's a husband of many. That's the problem with him, according to other parts of the Bible. He had hundreds of wives and concubines. And for him, it was all just commercialized. It was about power. It was about money. Solomon had a vineyard in Baal Hamon. He let it out. He let out his vineyard to tenants, his body, his relationships, his sexuality, just available for money. Each was to bring for its fruit 1,000 shekels of silver. But don't be like that, she says. My own vineyard is mine to give. Keep your money, Solomon. 1,000 shekels are for you, Solomon, and 200 are for those who tend its fruit. I'd rather have love and commitment than money. Don't commercialize it, the song is saying. And still we do that today. We've realized this huge power that sex and attraction has, and so lots of people make money out of it. Advertising and selling music and getting people to buy tickets for movies. Pornography, very much like that, isn't it? It's about the power of having lots and lots of people available at your disposal, just like Solomon with his many, many women. But there's no love there. It's all fake. It's all just a commercial exchange. I think the Me Too movement has helped us realize the cost of that. Of that approach for sexuality, how painful that is. What a great abuse of power it is for someone like Solomon and those who are like him today. So guard it. It's worth it. It's worth more than all that money. That's what the song is saying. So precious to be able to give your love to one person. It's far more valuable and worthwhile. And the last couple of sentences of the song are... Well, I just want to say they're really nothing very different from what we've had before. Just the same, it's really where we were at the beginning. The song starts with an attraction and it grows into longing and then fulfillment. And then it sort of starts to go back down to longing and just at the end almost peters out with just a few quiet notes of attraction again. The song leaves us with those same unfulfilled feelings that the song began with. And in fact, the Bible leaves us that way too. The very last sentence of the Bible leaves us waiting and longing. It ends by saying, come, Lord Jesus. Jesus says, I'm coming soon. And his people respond, come, Lord Jesus. We are left with unfulfilled feelings. And that's something we all have in common. Some of us here might be in satisfying relationships and feel that there's a lot of romantic love in their lives and that it's gone well. Others feeling deeply in need of love and struggling without that relationship at times, and perhaps others content. But wherever we are in that spectrum, to some extent it's true of all of us, because human love can never fully satisfy. And it's appropriate that we end with that sense of waiting and longing. The song has been saying, love is worth the wait. And above all, the love of Jesus is worth the wait. So there's nothing else that makes you want to obey Jesus. Then it should be waiting for him, for his passionate love. And so let's ask ourselves about that. Will we wait for him? Will we stay faithful? Will we keep ourselves for him? The Bible talks in that way. 2 Corinthians, our first reading. I'm jealous for you with a godly jealousy. I promised you to one husband, to Christ, so that I might present you as a pure virgin to him. Will we be like that? Waiting for Jesus, loyal, faithful to him. Because love, love's power, his power, his love, his almighty love is unstoppable. And it's worth great care to wait for it so that we enjoy it to its full.